one, I'll be talking about Python BPF, what is it and how it works. But before that, a quick introduction about me and Varun. So I'm Pragyansh. I work at Canonical in Ubuntu Engineering. I'm also the co-maintainer of Python BPF, which has nothing to do with my day job. And Varun's an engineering student who works with me on Python BPF. He couldn't make it here because of some reasons. But yeah, another person I forgot to include in the slide, but I must acknowledge, is Karthikeya, a PhD student at EBFL, who helped us with our doubts with EBPF and was very helpful in guiding us through this project. So yeah, the project. Python BPF is a pure Python front-end for writing EBPF programs. It allows you to write both EBPF and its corresponding user space code in Python. And they can be in the same file, they can be in split across different files. It can also be in a Python notebook across multiple cells. Now, writing EBPF in Python is not a new idea and might sound somewhat outdated as well, as BCC already existed in 2015, 16. But how Python BPF does this is very different from BCC. So if you've used BCC for writing EBPF programs before, you might know that you still have to write the EBPF specific part in a multi-line string if you're using it in the same file, or have to have a different file and then reopen that and read that in your Python file. And your EBPF specific code is written in a flavor of C, and only the user space processing part is in Python. In Python BPF, the users use a subset of the existing Python grammar to write EBPF code. And this has some benefits, like Python dev tools like linters and tree sitters are useful for the whole file now. This also potentially lowers the barrier of entry for people to learn EBPF by hiding a lot of typing details and handling common verification failure mitigations behind the scenes. So this is a side-by-side comparison of the same code written in BCC and Python BPF. This was one of the examples in the BCC tutorial. You can see the DevTools at work with proper syntax highlighting as compared to the BCC example given on the left side. This is somewhat superficial when it comes to benefits, as we'll discuss what else Python BPF enables in our later slides. Let me give you a basic overview of this program. At the top, we have the various imports of Python BPF, the decorators, the helpers, the maps, and type hints, which are necessary. Then we declare a custom data type, data T, which has a PID timestamp and the command, which is a char array. Then we also have a perf event array map of type BPF perf event array. And then there's the function which attaches itself to sys enter clone trace point and then outputs some data to the perf event array map. So yeah, that's the basic. That's what a Python BPF program would typically look like. Let's move on to how do we compile this. So this is a big image, and I wish I could implore you all to remember this for the rest of the presentation, but we can come back to this slide again if we need it. This is what our, firstly, as a one-time step, we have to generate the vmlinux.py vmlinux header. So we generate it using a script that we have written that runs BPF tool to create vmlinux.h and then runs clang to py on it with some tweaks to give us vmlinux.py so that we can use your running kernels data structures in the EBPF code that you're writing. Then we can take the input as a Python file or a Python notebook source. And then BPF chunks are marked out and processed by Python BPF. What are BPF chunks? These are just code snippets which will be like compiled to a BPF object. So if there's a file that contains both eBPF code and user space code, we are just concerned with the BPF chunks. The rest of the code is run through any Python interpreter. So yeah. Yeah, and then we first look at VM Linux imports and how they are being used. So if there is any kernel data structure or kfunk or something that is present in vmlinux.py imported from there and being used there. So as a first step, we create the LLVMIR for that said import. And then we create the symbol table for those imports and like inject them into our local and global symbol tables for the input file we have, which will be populated with other program logic later. Then we do struct processing, any custom data types you might have declared. And then comes map processing, where we generate LLVMIR for any maps you might be using. We do this in this specific order because you might be using those custom struct types in your map declarations and might be using, of course, always using those maps in your functions that you'll be writing. So this is the order we follow. Then comes the real part, function processing, where we do a pass to kind of guess how many local symbols you need and how much local stack space you need, and then assign those stack spaces to symbols. At times you can have the same stack space for multiple symbols, fill in type metadata, and then process all of the expressions one by one. Yeah. So conversion of Python AST to LLVMIR is done by a project called LLVMLite, which is Numba. We were thinking of using just LLVM, but we figured that let's try with LLVMLite. It allows us to write everything in Python, and I don't know, this goes in with the spirit of the project. Then, okay. Then now that we have that IR file, we can just pass it to LLC, and it gives us a BPF object file. We also have a sister project called PyLibBPF, which is essentially just Python bindings for libBPF. And we can pass on the struct definitions that we created during this pass and pass that on to our user space code, which is using PyLibBPF, so you don't have to declare the same structs twice and then use those map and struct definitions in your user space. So yeah, that's the compilation flow. Now I'll go through what is the anatomy of a Python BPF program through a walkthrough. So this is the disk snoop example, which we have ported from BCC to Python BPF. And first we take in the C types import. These are necessary, even though type hints are optional in Python. For Python BPF, they are necessary because you need to compile it down to LLVMIR, and there are some places where you just can't guess types after some point. So these are common, and also like when you are creating, suppose this hash map, which is a map of type BPF hash, it's not the data structure hash map, you have to give the key and value types, and they could have been like, instead of equals, we could have used colon, but that's something that I will be talking about in the next slides. Okay. Then there are some imports from our vmlinux.py, struct ptrex, which is the type of the context argument passed to functions attached to kprobes. Then there's a request struct, which is a common data structure in VM Linux header. Then we have the decorators, BPF, BPF global. Compile is not a decorator, but map and section. These are necessary to point out the BPF chunks and what kind of BPF chunk they are. Then we have the ktime helper, which maps to BPF ktime. And the hash map type is imported from Python bpf.maps. There are, we have listed other map types there as well. So, yep. Next we have what a function body would look like. So first, if we have to attach a function to like a section, we provide that section using the section decorator. Of course, the BBF decorator should come first to mark that this is to be compiled down to a BPF object. And I am not quite happy with the syntax we use in the section as the argument for section, and I'll come to that later. But yeah, then we have trace completion. This is, I think I've shown this before, and this is a zoomed in part of that. So struct ptrex, as I said, is the type for context. And this function returns an int 64. At the end, I have to add a type ignore return value because MyPy complains that 0 is not C int 64. But Python BPF internally would assume a constant int 64 if no type is specified. And so return 0 is actually C int 64. MyPy doesn't know it. So for satisfying it, we have to add the ignores. So yeah, then we have context.di. Context, if we just take the type of context.di in LLVMIR, it will come out to be int 64. So, but the user knows that it's a, it can be converted to a pointer to struct. So you just do struct request, get the request object from it, and then data len command flags, request or data len request command flags. There is also this interesting bit that we don't know if data len and command flags are pointers or pointers to pointers or integers. We will just use a dot to dereference it to any depth level. And yeah, this is part of the type deduction we have to do. Then another interesting bit is start.lookup. So in C, for example, if you were looking up, if you were doing a map lookup, that would have been a stateless function where you have to pass the map as well and the argument. But I think for Python, it makes sense to make it look like start is a data container and you can have a lookup on it. You can also overload the dunder method for indexing, and then you have start square brackets request pointer, and that does it pretty well. Then we have the usage of ktime minus request TSP. And this would be interesting because the type for ktime and request TSP does not match here, but still it works. And then we have print, which allows you to use Python-like format strings. And print is actually BPF print k. So you see there are only three arguments because we cannot do four. So that's there. And at the last, I won't explain trace start because I think an explanation of trace end covered the things happening here pretty well. There's this part of BPF global where we specify the GPL license because it's used. You need to do this to use many of the helpers and kfunks in the Linux kernel. We haven't automated it yet. This has to be done by the user itself. At the end is the compile function. Now, this is important, that the compile function has to be at the end of all BPF chunks. And instead of and what compile does is spit out an object file which contains a BPF object file. There are some variations of compile that you can use. You can use compile to IR to only get the LLVM IR instead of the object file if you need to inspect something while debugging yourself. And nice. Instead of compile and compile IR, you can also use the BPF object from pylibbpf, which works pretty much like what BCC user space code does. So, and you can have all of your things in the same file, and that's pretty neat. Then, coming to demos and examples, this was presented at Linux Plumbers Conference 2025, where we presented some demos. I don't want to do that again because of two reasons. A, the demo was like 10 minutes showing four different things. B, there are some people here who have attended LPC 2025 and this talk would have been like a waste of time for them if I did this again. So, but I do implore you to go see the recording from this timestamp. 5 minutes, 52 seconds. We did four examples, TUI based container monitor, Syscall anomaly detection for Spotify, then kernel symbolization using BlazeSim, and VFS read latency example with different, like in a Python notebook, then in a TOI and a live web dashboard, and how you can leverage the Python ecosystem to make your eBPF tools better using Python BPF. Also, I welcome you to mess with the project and the examples we have on GitHub. Most of these are ported over from BCC. We have a try it out section where we list out the steps you need to take to set up Python BPF and mess with it. Yeah, I think I've covered the bits in this slide that the BPF decorator is what marks a BPF chunk, and then you can specify further if it has to be a struct, if it has to be a map, or if it's a global, or if there's a section that you need to attach it to. So those are the decorators. The BPF snippet, any BPF chunk will have at least two of these decorators, one for marking it, one for specifying it. Now, yeah, a big challenge while working on it, and one of the things that we are still working on, that's why the slides are named the internals, trying to make typing work. One of the reasons why we are still working on Python BPF is to lower the barrier of entry to learning eBPF and writing those programs, and abstracting away typing has some benefits because now people don't have to know everything about what they're writing, and if we handle some VM Linux verifier errors and typing ourselves behind the scenes, it gives for a much easier experience. But so let's define an action on a data container or data to be an operation which involves the set data, or maybe a function call to which this data is an argument of. Then we can find such action points in the input file and employ our type deduction on it, because these action points are the only places where we have to care about the data type of the container in question. I tried to read about auto and declare type and how they perform type deductions in C++, and the outcome is to have a set of rules and just wing it. I don't know if we can ensure that all cases will be covered by us.